So hello everyone. So I'm here with Sinyu, Mr. Hello. New Sinyu.
Hi.
A lawyer with Amoeba nowadays. So.
Yeah.
And a long time person hanging around with the Bar Council Young Lawyers Committee. Any other?
Still young.
Still young. Used to be Bursae. Yep. Gone around places. Haven't got arrested before.
Tried
and failed.
They didn't want to arrest me.
But yes.
It's costly to arrest a lawyer.
Very true. So today we have you here with us, and we want to talk about a few things. It's been a fun 2 weeks. We have had the Peaceful Assembly Act getting amended. We have had 1G getting convicted of sedition again. And we had IPCMC that just cropped up yesterday. So let's talk about it a little.
Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday. It was like a week ago because you guys are lawyers, you guys get the early access. Peasant cycles get the late access.
Yeah, well, I can't comment too much on that.
So let's not pummel too much on that first. So let's start with the Peaceful Assembly Act.
Yep.
So that law is a fun law established in 2012 after they amended part of the Police Act.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to give us freedom of assembly. So that obviously never happened. We just heard the last podcast, Ami gets arrested, and that was also part of the Peaceful Assembly Act. So just a few things that jumped out at me. So they want to change the date of the notice that we have to give the police for an assembly.
Yeah, yeah. It's 5 days now.
It's 5 days now. Is that a good thing?
Well, it's better, but it's an act which is wholly unnecessary. That's my view. Because you have this right of freedom of assembly under the Constitution.
Yeah.
But you have this act which... basically prescribes how you are to exercise that right.
Mm-hmm.
We would be quite fine without this particular act.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no need to enact the Peaceful Assembly Act to prescribe the way which how we're going to exercise our freedom of assembly. And you know, there's a lot of things in the act which the bar has raised before. I think when Parliament was debating the bill, that is not required.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you look at the Act, there's this whole section on duties and responsibilities of the organizer and duties and responsibilities of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
So, those are the things which you put it inside and it becomes, for me, an impediment as to how we exercise that right.
Okay.
So prior to this, there was, of course, a lot of things you can't do under the Act. You can't have a street protest.
Yep.
So it's very strange because under that Act, and it's quite funny because under the Act, it defines what assembly is.
Yep.
But you cannot have a street protest.
Yep.
So if you do a street protest, it becomes a criminal offence.
Yep.
So a few of our fellow activist friends have been charged, Maria, Simpson Sin, Mandip. They were charged for participating in a street protest. So I don't understand how you can have an assembly without movement.
Yeah.
So any movement would on the street, you know, would lead it to a street protest.
Yep, pretty much. Because what we had, the interesting part is you can't have street protests, and street protests was essentially an assembly that's marching from one point to another point. But when the police gives us a form to fill up, when do you want to do your assembly? There's one question there. Where are you starting and where are you marching towards?
No, but all assembly, unless you have an assembly at a padang, which is not as fun,
naturally,
as a assembly from point A to point B. And I think I can't remember who, someone said that When people assemble together, and when they start to move towards another point, that's the penumbra of the protest. So we don't want to be like Singapore, you know, they have
A speaker corner, and you speaker corner, arrested.
And you just go there, and you know, do whatever you want. We want to be on the streets.
Yeah,
that's kind of the whole point of having a mass protests, and that's really to disrupt the even tempo of well, I wouldn't say society, but it's to provoke the government. Mm-hmm. There's only one point to protest. Mm-hmm. There's only one point to civil disobedience, only one point to non-violence. Mm-hmm. It's to provoke the government.
Response. Yeah.
And to hopefully gain support from that. But, you know, that being said, it's all water under the bridge now because they have since abolished that offense of street protests. Mm-hmm. So now we can have street protests.
So one interesting thing that still jumped out to me was back then, we always get into this bickering fight with the police. They'll say that you need to give us a 10 days notice. And we'll say, no, that's unconstitutional because the Court of Appeal panel has, the bench has decided that it's unconstitutional. And then they'll say, no, there's another decision that says it's constitutional. So now that that has reduced to 5 days, where do we stand?
Well, I think to put a time period as to when you can put in your notice is quite arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, even if I don't fulfill that 5 days notice, mm-hmm. or even if it's 3 days, the point is, have my assembly disrupted or have my assembly caused any harm to anyone? Mm-hmm. The only argument against that is that, oh, I must give notice so that the police can prepare to facilitate.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the purpose that particular requirement was there in the first place, mm-hmm. because I think in the very first genesis of the act, mm-hmm. It's a criminal offense if mm-hmm. you don't comply with that notice. But that being said, some protests we plan way ahead.
Yep.
Like per se, we had 1 month.
Yep.
To plan, and everyone knew about per se 1 month before. Mm-hmm. But there are some protests which can happen in an instant. Mm-hmm. People are so flat up that they want to go down to the streets.
Yeah.
And they want to protest.
So like our minister, when he did the solidarity rally for Christchurch, 3 days notice.
Yeah. Yeah. So the act doesn't seem to allow protests to happen instantaneously. Yeah. Which, you know, sometimes can be the case. Mm-hmm. But as long as the police takes note of mm-hmm. there being an impending protest and mm-hmm. they can have time to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And most of it, you know, it doesn't require heavy police presence. Mm-hmm. There are some protests which are massive, mm-hmm. like Bersay, mm-hmm. 200,000-300,000 mm-hmm. people going down the streets, then okay, fine. You know, I need more preparation for this. But most protests, come on.
50 people.
You don't even get protests which are 1,000 people.
Yeah, it's quite
or 2,000 anymore, you know. So there is no need to impose such a time limit, lah. As long as reasonable notice is given, I think it's quite fine. But you know, it's better because it's no longer criminal offense. Mm-hmm. Everything is compulsable. Mm-hmm. So that's something which has improved, lah. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't been all bad, but you know, it goes back to my first point. It's not necessary to have mm-hmm. this particular legislation.
Oh, the whole legislation.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary at all.
So just an interesting thing to try to pick your mind a little. So what if they change the Peaceful Assembly Act and impose a burden on the state to facilitate or provide support for it? So if, say, someone provides a notice, then the police must provide the necessary support in the sense of traffic police and...
Yeah, but that's a problem, isn't it? You have if you look at this act, it doesn't so much says what the state should do.
Yep.
It's more of what should the participants and what should the organisers do. Yep.
So if you it's know neutral? This,
well, if it's the other way, then fine. Mm. At least it fortifies your right under
Article 10,
freedom of assembly. But the whole intention of this act wasn't to do that.
Mm. It's to curtail, restrict outright.
It's to curtail and it's to prescribe for consequences, huh?
Okay.
So it's not meant to operate in a way where, oh, I now have more freedom, and I have this legislation which the police mm-hmm. now has to follow, because you ask yourself, if I go down the streets, what's the police supposed to do? In any mature democracy, of course, the police are supposed to facilitate.
Yeah.
But in Malaysia, we're not a mature...
Yeah.
We are an adolescent democracy, so...
Well, to be fair to the police, the traffic police has been very helpful the last 3 years.
You know, I think they learned their lesson after Bersih, mm-hmm. after a number of Bersihs. So, when we first had Bersih, I think the first Bersih wasn't too spectacular. But the second Bersih was quite... It was quite violent.
Yeah, naturally. Tear gas, and Peyton.
And yeah, it was quite chaotic. So we had I think we had a RCI, or, no, not RCI, sorry, a Sukam inquiry.
Yeah. It.
And then the third Bersih, more people turn up.
Yeah.
Despite the violence.
Yeah.
You know? And there were a few other protests, smaller protests.
Yeah.
This was, I think, the 2000.
12,
around 2012 to 2014, 2015 period, there were a lot of protests, and you're always met with FRU, like Strike Force. So, and it usually results in arrests and violence. Bersih 3 was very violent. I think it's well documented, the police brutality that happened during that protest. So, that's when you realize, or rather the government realized that, hey, it's not working. The more violence we use, the more people come out. So this goes back to the whole point of non-violence.
Yeah.
You know, participants go there, they're not violent. The state
is the violent
becomes one. Violent. That's how you swing public support. So they realize that to their credit, and they stop using tear gas, stop using water cannons, and they started to be more cooperative. Of course, you have stupid things which they do, you know, banning t-shirts, per se, for, or charging people in court under the PAA. So there's this whole slew of opposition politicians, you know, they participate in the rally, they get charged, and they risk losing their seats.
Yeah.
So, that's that. But, I think in terms of opening up democratic space in Malaysia, the violence by the police, in a way, backfired against them, and it helped open up democratic space.
So, we need to thank the police for the tear gas and the beating up the face.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was kind of disappointed because I was quite well prepared for Bersih 4. I had a whole gas mask.
True. You
know, like the industrial gas mask where you paint.
Yeah.
So that was on.
And I remember we had this demilitarized zone between the police and the participant. And we had the stage there. I still remember I was there as an observer. And then I saw you walking towards there. And me and my friend was like, how much chance, what's the odds he's going to be going there and never come out again?
You know, I think we by then we did have a very good relationship with the police.
Yeah.
We plan it through with them, although they still call the rally illegal. Yeah. Of course, they're going to do that. So,
you
take what you can get.
You walk back up with your handcuffs. That was disappointing.
Yeah. So I tried.
Yeah, we tried. We observed. We didn't get to catch a good photo. You're getting arrested, so shame. But yes, so another interesting thing that comes with the memo was the compound system.
Yeah. So basically, what it means is that you don't get charged in court.
Yeah.
So there's no charge against you. There's no conviction.
Yeah.
So you won't be at risk of losing your seat if you're a member of parliament.
Yeah.
Or you won't be known as a criminal.
Yeah.
Or you won't have a conviction record.
Yeah.
So that's something good. But, you know, ideally, no one should be punished in any form. You want to call it compound or fine or whatever, but no one should be punished for exercising their right.
Yeah.
Of course, if you know how they exercise it results in violence, if they are violent, then you know there are adequate criminal laws
for rioting,
affray that you can use against them. But again, why the need to impose a penalty for the exercise of your rights?
And just right now, the compound is also a bit tricky because it's issued by police, not by the courts. No,
no, and the compound, Mr. Everything is compoundable, but the police will be the one. The police police will be the one to issue the compound. But that again, it's discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it can still be an offense if the police say, "Oh, I'm not going to compound this."
Mm.
It can be compound, but it doesn't mean they have to compound.
Hmm.
You know?
So we should buddy up with our new OCPD for Dang Wangi or Sento if they change. Yeah. Need to make sure they're our best friends so we don't get compounded.
So it's the same thing. And then, of course, there's a whole issue of whether a child can participate in a protest. A child still can't participate in a protest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite... it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Why a child cannot participate.
We have had one or two protests this year or last year that was on by children, so about people under the age of 18. There was one of the child marriage one that was outside parliament, and there wasn't any action taken against them.
Basically, they're saying that leave your kids at home.
Hmm.
Well, but if you're a kid and, you know, if you are mature enough, and if it's a peaceful assembly, why can't you be there?
Yeah, definitely something we should
but
look
that's
to.
That's another... provision in the Peaceful Assembly Act which you can't realistically enforce.
Yeah.
Because if you're 100,000 children and we have seen that, you know, in Bese in the Himpunan Hijau back then, there were many children.
Yeah.
And they could only pick a few to enforce, but you know it didn't deter children from coming out. They didn't stop their parents from bringing their children. People have been charged. Represented one. Parents was charged because he brought his kid to Himpunan Hijau. Yeah, but that was dropped. They couldn't prove that it was his kid. So
they couldn't prove that it was his kid.
There were so many people.
Right, okay.
In a massive rally, of course, in a rally of 5 or 6, and then
fair enough. But I've seen parents with a stroller and a baby inside to Bursay before. I think it was Bursay 3 actually. They left before the tear gas flew. Yeah. So that
welcome everyone. It's
a 2 years old baby.
It's a festival.
Well, fair enough. So I think we have spoke quite a good bit about Peaceful Assembly Act.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little about Sedition Act. Wan Gee got convicted. So everyone thought Sedition Act is in the dustbin of history after Pakatan took over. Then we had Fadia Khadija Singh getting investigated for alleged insult against the monarch or royal institution.
Yeah.
Now Wan Gee is convicted of it. Yeah. And apparently Haris Ibrahim, another activist, is facing his case next month.
Yeah.
So where do we stand? Because I know there's been some cases in Kapal Singh's case that some lawyers tried to argue against the constitutionality of it, but the court did not entertain the submission. They dismissed the case on another basis. But so where do we stand? Is it something that legally something that we're still pushing for, or is it something that's purely political at this stage that it's government's initiative to get rid of it or deal with it?
I think so much has been said about the Sedition Act, and you know, whatever I'm going to say, it's not something that is new or original, but the whole burden is now with the government. It's a question of political will, whether or not they want to abolish the Sedition Act. It's a very useful act to have for powers that be.
Yeah.
So, and I've said this before the election, that, you know, the true test of whichever government that wins is whether or not they can decentralize power.
Yeah.
And whether they can do away with all these laws which allows them to silence dissenters. And Sedition Act is, of course, it's infamous for being used, abused and misused. So the government has made a commitment in their manifesto, but we haven't seen that being carried out. Of course, recently we heard from the Prime Minister that let's repeal the Sedition Act, but we're looking at new laws. But the point is that you don't need new laws to replace the Sedition Act. There are adequate laws out there to deal with cases where people are inciting violence against another group. So there is no need to have the Sedition Act. Of course, we hear a lot of noise from I don't know how to classify this group, right wing, conservative.
I think there's extremists at this point.
there's no right There's no right term to describe those who disagree against the Sedition Act, because like conservatism or right wing, it's always a spectrum, you know. Yeah. There are some issues where they can be very liberal and there's some issues where very conservative. But you know, we know who we're talking about. They are saying that this Sedition Act is needed because how else are we going to regulate speeches against race, religion, royalty in Malaysia? But there is enough. Mm-hmm. There is enough. And even if we have to look at other laws, it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why the government wouldn't just, how do I put it, grow a spine and just proceed with abolishing the Sedition Act. You had a whole campaign premise not mainly but largely on the use of repressive laws against the people, against your own members.
Yeah.
And Sedition Act is one such law. And you have probably a very clear referendum, very clear approval by the electorate in GE14 to abolish the Sedition Act.
Mm-hmm.
So, what other sort of approval that you need? That is the part where I fail to understand.
Maybe they just need a pat on the back. Good job, guys.
they need to grow a spine. They need to grow a spine. When you're gonna try and please your dissenters, your right wings, with the hope of trying to gain their support, you risk alienating those who are already supporting you.
Yeah.
And you're not gonna gain any new votes.
Yeah.
Because they will be opposing you anyway.
Yeah. And they're just losing more support from their more moderate allies.
So you are not pleasing anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The only person you're screwing with is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they need to understand that lah. Then Wan Gee's case is one such example.
Yeah.
Where your own supporters
yeah.
have been convicted by a law which you refuse to repeal.
Yeah.
So it's a systematic failure lah. It's very sad what's happening to Wan Gee, that he had to, you know, go to prison for what we thought we have put behind.
Yeah.
It's very sad because Sedition Act should be abolished. The court is not entirely blameless. They should took cognizance that, hey, come on, this is a law which is quite clearly against the federal constitution.
Yeah.
You know? It seems like the judiciary has not moved on to appreciate that this is an act which is inconsistent with international norms, is inconsistent with our basic freedoms. I know there has been cases saying that it has, but those were at a time where we'll call it the dark ages.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, time to look at it again and see that, hey, this is wrong. So the court shouldn't just wait. So it's like a waiting game. You know?
Yeah.
Parliament's waiting for God knows who, waiting for the people, I suppose. Yeah. Then the court is pushing the blame to Parliament, or let Parliament decide. And then you have the Attorney General.
Yeah. That's watching his sentence say he doesn't
know.
He
didn't know. Which is...
it's a lie. We wrote to him about it. I have written letters record.
Which is quite ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, the use of the Sedition Act
yeah.
requires the consent of the PP to prosecute.
Yeah.
So it's something that, even if it happened before his time, he should know what's happening around. So, why couldn't he issue some sort of circular to say, hey, all such cases, bring it to my attention. So for him to come out with that press statement, it's a bit strange, lah. It's a bit strange, lah. And I think as the Attorney General, you are in a very powerful position to decide, you know. And when you decide to prosecute, you have to make that decision based on public interest.
Yeah.
You can't decide. You shouldn't decide just based on what the law is, because yeah. sometimes the law can be very draconian. Of course, the law can be quite ridiculous. Yeah. So that's why you have a discretion.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't need discretion.
Yeah.
What's the point? Just get a computer to do it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, breach this law. Okay, prosecute.
Yeah.
So you retain that discretion where if it's in the public interest, mm-hmm. you prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
So one example of cases which you shouldn't prosecute, because obviously it's not in the public interest to do so.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to think that I'm going to say sedition. It's not. It's mm-hmm. assisted suicide.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not assisted suicide. Yeah, assisted suicide. And then suicide.
Yeah.
And then suicide. Attempted suicide. Yeah. Sorry.
So we have, they had that issue in UK, you know, in the past.
Yeah.
There are people wanted it, people are agreeable to it, but it's the law against it. And the attorney, well, their public prosecutor didn't want to prosecute.
Correct.
But they also didn't want to issue an approval that, you know, go ahead.
So, like attempted suicide, do you see any prosecution? No, right? No. Because if, imagine you prosecute somebody for attempting suicide.
Yeah.
Imagine the public outrage it's going to cause.
Yeah. And euthanasia is another one.
Euthanasia in Malaysia, it's
a bit, a
bit grey lah there.
Yeah.
But Sedition Act.
Yeah.
Why prosecute is clearly not in the public interest.
Yeah.
Well, is it because you're worried that someone's feeling is going to be hurt?
Well, I mean, the argument from other quarters right now is someone's feeling was hurt.
It's a problem, isn't it? It's not to protect, it's not there to protect someone's feelings. It's sedition is like a step below treason, you know.
Yeah.
You need, like, people setting fire on things.
Yeah. The kind of incitement, a bit more proactive approach to it.
Yeah. But no mature democracy has sedition anymore.
Yeah.
So, I think we are refusing to grow up.
Oh, sometimes it's easier to
grow up. Or rather, the society has grown up, but the government doesn't want to grow up.
Ooh, but has the society grown up, though?
I think society has grown up. I think a lot of noise or a lot of dissent that we hear is magnified in the media.
Yeah.
I generally don't think that society is against the abolishment of Sedition mm-hmm. Act. I think the media, and that's one thing that we, our media, our fourth estate should
mm-hmm.
Work on is, you know, don't give or don't highlight
mm-hmm.
so much on certain voices mm-hmm. where without the media they mm-hmm. wouldn't have this platform. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we look at the media, oh, it's reported, so that means it's very serious. It's not. It's not. The protest might be 5 people, 10 people. You know.
Well, I mean, they once reported a protest with 30 people because of a dog. So,
well, it's symptomatic on clickbait reporting lah. Because people like to see is
fun news,
silly news lah.
No, it's human nature. We want to see something fun. We don't go watch a movie because it's boring.
We don't read the news because it's good. So it becomes everyone wants to be a celebrity. It's a very sensationalist.
Hmm. Alright.
Yeah. And the government seem to pay a lot of attention to that.
Yeah, and they're also paying a lot of attention to social media, no?
The funny thing is they don't, this is how they engage, you know. You don't seek feedback from your constituencies.
Yeah.
You get your feedback from what's reported on the news.
Yeah.
Oh, Malaysia kini. Everyone goes crazy there.
Mm. But could they even reach out to their constituency? So in
they should.
Could they? Because in
of
March,
of course they can. You got to go canvas your opinions lah.
So in March, we actually did a art exhibition on death penalty. We did it intentionally in TTDI under Hannah Yeo's her constituency. And we tried to reach out to public. So we didn't go Facebook and blast it out there, but we go out giving out flyers at the markets at Taman Tun and things like that to try and get local people to attend. We couldn't get anyone there. Everyone that was there at the event was actually out of Taman Tun. Out of her constituency.
Right.
And she was actually present during the event to give an officiating speech.
Right.
So it's the kind of thing that...
Do an opinion poll, lah. I mean, that's why you have all these, what do you call it, posters.
I guess so. Posters.
Surveyors. Surveyors.
But
I don't know.
Accurate
la.
Though?
Huh?
Because those are also online, then you can have people tampering it.
No, they have those robocalls, right?
Right.
A lot
so
of those
do,
robocalls.
Do what Rafizi did in the past.
Well, there are ways, la. It's just, I mean, it's very sad.
Yeah.
If you represent your constituency,
yeah.
and you cannot, you don't know, or you can't get feedback from them.
Yeah.
And what's the bloody point?
Yeah. But it is a big constituency.
Well, too bad lah.
300,000 people, I think. Constituency will have at least 200,000 people.
You don't have to get every 200,000 people. You get a representative. What you call
so
that?
So cross-cutting.
Cross-cut. Yeah. What's the statistician's term for it? No?
Essentially, enough here and there to know that everyone thinks roughly that way.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So government needs to get a spine, sedition needs to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, another interesting thing is we are kind of caught in this weird cycle because previously, 2 years ago, a year ago, the federal court refused to hear any constitutional challenge unless it has gone through the whole trial phase.
Oh, yeah.
And exhausted their appeal.
Yeah.
So, which is why I think a lot of cases right now on sedition, like Haris Ibrahim, Wanji, even Fahmi Rezawan, it's all stuck at prosecution going to trial and not having a constitutional challenge.
Yeah.
So, do you think anyone, like, say, Swaram, we work quite closely with Wanji on his case, should we be pushing for a constitutional challenge now?
Yeah, it's there in the Courts of Judicature Act. You don't have to wait till the end of the trial. Mm. That's quite clear.
So we should challenge that part of the precedent also, lah?
No, it's, for me, those cases are when the federal court, they don't want to decide.
Yeah.
They are trying to delay the inevitable.
Yeah. And you can argue they were still doing it even for Kapal Singh's case when they were trying to dismiss his case.
It was, so hopefully under the new Chief Justice, this is going to change. Because,
hopefully.
Quite obviously, you see, when you charge somebody, you're putting him through this process, you know.
Yeah.
Even though he's presumed to be innocent, but you think putting him through a process which can be quite unpleasant.
Yeah.
So if my premise is that this law is unlawful,
and
you don't really need facts to analyze, you know, all you need to see is whether it measures against the federal constitution. Mm-hmm. It's inconsistent. If this law is inconsistent, just you have to go through that test without going through facts.
Yeah.
The fact that you have to put him through trial,
put
him through this very unpleasant process,
it's
punishment.
Yeah.
And ultimately, he could be acquitted and the law could be found to be unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
But he has undergone through this process.
Yeah.
Is he going to be compensated? No.
Yep. And then all the travel costs incurred is still going to
stay. So, and you have issues of bail. And imagine those who can't post bail, they would be in prison. So, it's punishment.
Yeah.
You're punishing the person.
So, one last bit. Punishment is a good note. So, in Wanji's case, he still had avenue to appeal to the Court of Appeal for his conviction. And the judge refused to hear an oral submission for a stay of execution.
That is ridiculous.
So
that is so ridiculous.
So that does not usually
You don't
happen.
Need a written submission.
Yeah.
Sorry, you don't need a written application. You. That's why we allow for oral applications.
Yeah.
You know? And stay is usually applied orally right after the sentence or the... the sentence.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes... It defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So, in his case, that was
It's ridiculous, lah. It's just ridiculous, lah.
So, that
there
is...
no good... There can be no good explanation for that. It's just ridiculous.
So, but it's like what you described, then. It's just a means of punishing him.
I think our government, our parliament, and even society, to a large extent, even society, literacy on human rights issues should be improved.
Yeah.
Like I say, we are an adolescent. We're not babies, we are an adolescent democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Not adults yet,
mm-hmm.
you know. So these are things that we have to learn along the way. La.
Definitely. How to put less people in jail. We already got enough people in there.
Yeah, that's...
I think that's all the time we got for today's podcast. Well, for whoever's listening, I think there's 14 people that listened to our last podcast, so it's still a bit of a sad thing. But hopefully there's more
for
this
get
one.
There.
Well, if I get you arrested for sedition for this podcast, then I'm pretty sure we're going to get a million views after that. So, but let's not aspire to that, shall we? So let's try to go for more natural growth. So I'd like to thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you.
So we had Sinew today with us. If you want to read more about him, I'm pretty sure he has a few articles written up somewhere.
I think so, yeah.
I think he used to contribute to Lawyer Bureau, no?
I did.
Yeah.
I write some things once in a while when I feel like.
So if you ever want to read anything that's in the grey area of sedition, you know who to look up. Thank you for tuning in. Goodbye.